I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Fan Effect. Welcome to Fan Effect, everyone. This is Ryan Meeks, and in the studio, we have Andy Farnsworth, of course.
Hello.
And we have some special guests today. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm Johnny McKeon. I'm with Cumulus Media. I work for Power 94.9. I'm one of their talents. You can find out more information about me at Johnny McKeon. That's McKeon.
Okay.
Kellyanne Halverson. On Twitter, you can find me at Kellyanne Halvo. So.
Halvo. Mm-hmm. Okay. They are huge DC fans.
That's an understatement in my case.
Yep, I've been reading comics my whole life.
I'm sure they will not disappoint. Okay, so let's get into it. Shazam. We're talking about Shazam today.
This is one that they pre-screened. They did two Fandango screenings. Mm-hmm. I saw it on the 23rd of March.
Which you had to pay for.
I did, and I was willing to, and I was glad I did, to be quite honest.
Which, now that I've seen it, well spent.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I wish I would have spent the money on it.
And that was one of the things I thought it would be worth seeing twice. Twice before I even talked about it for everybody else, so I could make sure that what I thought was right, and it was, for the most part. For the most part, I backed off just to touch my original impression, because I think you have a different experience the first time and the second time. But sometimes the second time is a huge drop off, and I was really glad that in this case it was a very minimal drop off. Well, and I'll explain what I mean later.
Okay. And I think I do know what you mean. Not to go into it too much, but like, because I did some really detailed notes. I tried to do a scene-to-scene breakdown as I was doing this. Reading my notes this morning, I got just excited about doing this podcast as I was when I stopped, when we were done watching it. So,
and that's one of the things that is definitely the best part about Shazam is that it's kind of fun, and it kind of gets you – kind of gets you pumped. It's you don't leave the theater a lot of times. Like my 6-year-old was walking all the way back to the car, going Shazam, Shazam, Shazam.
Love it,
because he just had such a good time watching it, and I'm sure he was imagining himself. Yeah, turning
he was trying to change into Shazam.
Well, but the interesting thing about the movie was the question is what would you do if you were a 14-year-old and you suddenly had the superpower and body of a full grown adult? And I just thought that this movie answered it in a most hilarious way, and
fantastic.
I think it's going to clean up at the box office. I really do.
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
Yeah, I definitely would agree with that. It felt like a superhero movie meets Big. Like, it was really cool. It had a lot of heart,
exactly.
Had a lot of family, had a lot of laughs. I really enjoyed the pacing of this film. I felt like that was very different from other superhero films I've seen in the past. Usually, I feel like they get a little bit overcooked. Like Aquaman, I feel like I could have cut like maybe 20 minutes from it.
Really?
Yeah, but with Shazam, it was just scene to scene to scene, joke to joke to joke. I really enjoyed that aspect.
Kellyanne?
And it's a real good progression as well, the story arc, the pacing of it. And they made it so fun. Like, Captain Marvel, sorry, Shazam.
Well, Marvel has already sent a cease and desist to us.
We're going
to
pull this podcast.
That's who he's in my brain, so it's going to be a little harder. So I apologize for the slip up. Shazam, right from the start, has been compared to like a goofy Superman. So I was really excited.
Well, that's what the trailer made it look like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, from the very start, that's what drew kids to him, to that character, the differentiating between him and Superman. So I'm so excited they kept that goofiness. Really fun in the movie.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think that they just totally nailed that you don't even see in a lot of American cinema in general is the characters are so well developed. I mean, the moment you meet these kids, I mean, you're just so interested in who they are. I mean, you know who they are almost like within 30 seconds of them saying a few lines. And so the characters to me were just the thing that just was the shining, like the pinnacle of this movie. And so that, I mean, that's what I felt. The pacing was wonderful. The jokes were great. And, I mean, it was a comedy. You know, it was advertised as a comedy, so you weren't getting, like, a surprise, like, oh, this is a comedy type of thing. But
I think more that as far as just initial reaction, it was more weird, especially after all the comic book movies that we've had, to see somebody who looks kind of like Superman as completely kind of irreverence, maybe the wrong word, but it still feels kind of like – because, you know, I mean, there's a reverence around Superman.
Like, oh,
you've
got
to get Superman right. What? Superman killed Zod. Nope, this is not my Superman. Mm-hmm. And I get Batman's murdering people all over the place.
Yeah, bothered me too.
People hate that. But with this one, it was like they just said straight from the beginning. I mean, if they just showed Batman murdering people in the trailer – you know, you would have got a lot of the negative reaction out of the way, but I think it would have hurt sales. But in this case, nobody knows who Captain Marvel Shazam is.
No.
So you can do whatever you want, and it's just more like the visual dissonance between guy who looks like Superman and he's making jokes like Zachary Levi, then you're not sure what you're going to get, and that is exactly what you get.
Well, I really enjoyed that. Like, with the character, like, it felt like a 14-year-old kid with superpowers, you know? It sounded like it. He acted like it. The acting was great. Like, I really didn't have much of a disconnect between, you know, the actor playing Billy Asher Angel and Zach Levi as Shazam. Like, I felt like they were the same person.
Yeah, and that really was good. That put pressure, I think, on Asher Angel, because we all know Zachary Levi from Chuck. We know he was Entangled, and everybody could picture – I mean, I read somewhere, I think one of the national people's like, this is the role Zachary Levi was born to play. And I think at least the Hollywood Zachary Levi, because I don't know the guy.
Yeah.
But the Hollywood Zachary Levi, this is a perfect fit for him. And he, to me, was the best part of the movie. In fact, that was one of the things that dragged down my second viewing was, okay, let's just get to Zachary Levi already. The first time through, you're watching it and you're following the story and you're like, okay, because I don't know anything about it. So I'm just absorbing it all. And then the second time through, I'm watching for little things that I'm going to ask Kellyanne about later. Maybe you know too, Johnny.
Yeah.
But then I'm also like, okay, we need to get to Zachary Levi already. Like, already.
Seeing, because I knew the character's background a bit more, I kind of felt that a bit at first, but I really think it added to the pacing of it. It turned out really well that they started with the villain, is what we're saying.
Well, no, and I was okay with that, too. Mm-hmm. In fact, I didn't.
I thought that was a great way to start.
Is that Billy? And I'm like, no, that's not it. And then when they said his name, I literally, the first time I saw it, I thought, I bet Kellyanne recognizes that name because I sure don't know who that is. And I saw the caterpillar, but, you know, I didn't know. I there were several things that I saw the first time that I said, okay, I have no idea what that is, but it's been visually pronounced enough in the shot that it's got to mean something. I just don't know what
that
is.
There were a few things that I wrote down as well. Like did we want to wait till later to go into this?
It might be worth just giving a little bit of backstory, at least a little bit of setup, because kind of like Ant-Man and the Wasp, kind of like even Thor the first time through, people may have heard of these characters, or they may have. I would bet there's a whole bunch of people from my generation, you know, the people that are 35 up to maybe 50 or so, or maybe even older, that remember something of like. I seem to recall seeing the guy with the big lightning bolt on his chest. I seem to recall somebody that was like Superman, but it wasn't Superman. So there's going to be an element of familiarity, even if it's familiarity that you can't put your finger on. Mm-hmm. So just really quick setup. You've got 14-year-old Billy Batson. He's been in foster care since he was 4, and now he's suddenly living in a group home with 5 other foster children in Philadelphia. That's something I'm going to bring up later.
Yeah, it's different.
And I actually like that. But at any rate, one day he's being chased by some bullies and he suddenly finds himself magically transported to a cave where an old wizard gives Billy the power to defend Earth from evil. In this particular case, the 7 deadly sins. All Billy has to do is say the word Shazam and his body magically transforms from a 14-year-old into a fully grown adult superhero. That's Zachary Levi.
Mm-hmm.
And he has powers similar to Superman and the Flash and some others, as we find out. As you might expect, that leads to many hilarious situations where Billy or Shazam is trying to figure out how to use his powers. But he's got to figure it out quick because the 7 deadly sins have found a human to put their power into. And he wants Billy's power, too. So that's as far as we'll go with spoilers because we don't want to give it away for people who want to go see it. But that will help you a little bit as you go in so that you know. Because there's not really superhero stuff going on in the first part of the movie. And I don't want somebody to be like, well, this really sucks. Where's the superheroes? And then bail on this before you get to the part that makes it all worth it.
But you can't. But the superheroes are there. You very much know are aware of the fact that you're in a world where superheroes do exist.
Yes. Just,
yeah.
This does take place in the DC universe of Batman and Superman, in case you were wondering.
Mm-hmm.
And though they are not an actual part of the story, and this is not trying to service a larger story in the way that the Marvel movies do, and that kind of the DC movies had tried to do. They do reference the fact that it's the Superman, that's Henry Cavill. You see a picture of him in the newspaper. You see the Batarang in the shape of Ben Affleck's Batman. So this is very much that world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it's I'm really excited to see what they go with next on this movie. I mean, it's we're going to be going into a more deep dive in our next section. But
well, tell me what were the top two or three things you liked, just if you had to put it into a half a sentence, what were the things that you liked most about Shazam?
Again, the characters, just phenomenal character development and just understanding of what your characters are. And then the pacing, the comedy, and then the drama as well.
Okay,
there were some great moments that got you choked up. At least a little. At least me. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a
an emotional person.
But I got choked up a few times in it, and specifically because one of them was very similar to some situations that happened to me. I'm not an orphan, but we'll explain that a little bit later too.
Well, for me, I agree with you. The humor and the fun, the balance, I thought was really welcome. You know, I always think that comic book movies should have fun and humor to it. And trust me, I've read comic books my whole life. I take it as serious as an X-Man. I'm one of the few people who thought that Thor Ragnarok was too much of a comedy, just a little bit too much. Even though I liked all the humor, I wanted it to be taken a little more seriously in the script, or at least as far as it went. So I think it can be pushed too far. And actually, I thought this did a great balance between those things. And I agree with you on the story, the heart. There was like heart to it, the drama and emotion. And, you know, it would have been easy to just go all Ragnarok and just go all jokes. But it was a good striking balance. And the thing I liked possibly the most, you know, I review movies for KSL TV also, so I'm often trying to think of not just how it applies to me and people. You know, we do the Fan Effect podcast where, yes, we're already all bought into this, but I'm also trying to think of, okay, what about a parent who's going to take their kids? How could I get a parent to go see this so that their kid can get hooked on it? So when I think of it that way, one of the things I liked most about this was the accessibility. This is the most accessible superhero movie that you can go to without feeling like you've already either missed part of the story, or they assume you know so much about the character already that they don't really want to go into. Because let's be honest, if we have to watch another Batman movie where we have to watch Batman's origin again, like it's been done. You don't have to show us this. There are some things. Peter Parker got bit by a radioactive spider. They figured that out in Spider-Man Homecoming, and they just said, oh, yeah, he got bit by a spider. Everybody knows this. Let's get on to the thing. Let's get you an Iron Man suit now. But with this, because it actually helps that it's not a really – it's a heavyweight superhero. There's no back – there's not really any back pressure on it. And so you could just say, hey, it doesn't matter if you've seen the other DC movies. Watch this. Everybody you're just like – I forget the other kid's name, best friend's name.
Freddy, yeah.
You're just like Freddy. You like Batman and Superman too, and hey, well, there's a superhero right in front of me.
Well, and that's the genius of having Freddy in there and portrayed as that character, a superhero-obsessed character, because if there is absolutely something you need to know, he's right there being like, this is what you
need. He's your writing in the plot that helps get it out to
the – exactly.
And that was definitely one of my favorite dynamics was Freddy and Billy's relationship. I mean, Jack Dylan Grazer is a very talented actor.
And he's from It.
Yes.
Okay, I knew
funny
I'd seen
kid
it. I couldn't remember if it was Stranger Things or It. It was one of those two.
Yeah, and just the dynamic that they had, I could watch that all day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could watch a whole TV Netflix series just based on them doing their thing. The other element that I really enjoyed, and I'm trying not to spoil it, but was the implementation of social media in the movie.
Like, there's like a YouTube page almost that they're uploading the videos to, right?
Yeah,
even in the teaser trailer, they show that, so.
It was fantastic because I always think about this now with movies, you know, like, well, you know, social media, everyone has cameras, everyone has phones. How do they deal with that in superhero movies? And the way they handled it, I thought it was absolutely perfect.
And that it became a part of the movie.
Exactly.
Whereas on Spider-Man Homecoming, you know, Tony Stark found Peter basically from YouTube videos,
yeah.
but they didn't really make that a key part. Whereas this, it was almost like YouTube was a minor character
exactly.
in the film. And I like that too.
Well, and that's what kids would do too, is anything cool happens,
oh, yeah.
let's make this viral. Let's put it on YouTube. Let's get this on Twitter. So
and he's taking selfies with people.
Yeah.
Of course, that's exactly what would happen. In fact, the only time I could think of something similar to that in the Marvel universe was when, I think it was The Dark World,
yeah.
when the Thing comes into London. And, like, all the kids at the library have their phones out recording it instead of trying to get out of the way.
Well, I think that's so much fun, too, about making this story happen in a modern world is it is such a different origin than what would have happened when it was originally created in 1939. And it makes it so much fun. I love it. I love
that's
that
true. This guy's been around since, like, 1939, 1940-ish.
Yep. Yep.
So Silver Age, if you're familiar with DC Comics. And that would be an easy – I'm a Marvel guy over DC. Mm-hmm. But I'm impressed with the longevity of DC's heroes and how concepts that they came up with in the 40s are still enjoyable today, whereas most of Marvel's modern history started in the 60s. So,
thank you, Stan Lee.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly, who I think worked at DC originally and then switched over to whatever Marvel was called before they were Marvel. But all right, well, you know what? Let's take a break here. So if you had to give it a rating, I gave it 3 out of 4 stars personally. It was 3.5. I lowered it to 3 because of that that little bit of a delay.
The getting grueling on the story?
No, just I wanted to get to Zachary Levi, and it felt like it took forever the second time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just because I was so looking forward to that part and seeing how people who I knew that liked it would react. But still, I mean, it's a wavering between 3 and 3.5 because I just enjoyed it that much.
I definitely give it a 3 stars as well. It was just overall a great piece of work. There's room for improvement, but I mean, overall – They really – the good writing shows. The special effects were decent. Like, it wasn't overblown. The pacing was great, which I really appreciated. So, yeah, overall, definitely 3 stars.
Mm-hmm. 3.5. I love it. There's room for improvement always, but that's with any storytelling. Very fun, very energetic. I love the relationships that are built in there, the emotions that are in there. And, yeah, love it.
Cool. Well, and I'd have to give it a 3.5 as well. I mean, it was just a great movie. I had a blast. I want to see it more, and can't wait to see what they do with it in the upcoming sequel.
All right, so stick around after this. We're going to come into the deeper dive with spoilers. If you haven't seen it, stop here for now, and then come back. If you have seen it, this is where we're going to talk about all the stuff. I bet we have the same questions you do.
Fan Effect, welcome back. We are reviewing Shazam, and we're here with...
Andy Farnsworth.
Johnny McKeon.
Kellyanne Halverson.
And we're having a great time here. Let's get into a little bit more spoilerish section here. I mean, let's really talk about this movie. I mean, it is something that I am just so jazzed about, and so we got to talk some specifics. But before we do that... Let's take a look at this trailer.
How about a listen?
Or listen. Sorry. Let's listen to this trailer.
You're a visual guy. It's okay.
As Jake, say my name so my powers will become yours. Shazam.
Wait, for real?
Say it, okay?
That's crazy, right?
What are your superpowers?
Superpowers, dude? I don't even know how to pee in this thing.
All right. Yeah,
so you got a good balance of heroic and hilarious.
Yeah,
yes.
Got to learn how to pee in the suit. I mean, I think that's like...
Which he did figure out, by the way. Did you like that?
Yeah, that was a good scene.
I think that's something that's got to be
drank,
in
what, 47 Dr. Peppers?
All right.
I like it when the throwaway lines end up meaning something later on if you're paying attention.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the best.
Yes. So what makes this so different, guys? Like, what makes this superhero movie different? Especially, like, so we have another one that was comedy-oriented, pretty much a comedy, which was Thor Ragnarok. I felt specifically that the comedy in this was so much more organic. Like, there's this Marvel formula where they have a serious moment and then it's just interrupted with a joke, and it turns, you know, it turns the serious moment into the build up to the punchline, right? The setup for the punchline, right? I felt that there was actual funny setups for punchlines that you know made a lot of sense in this, and there was just funny situations.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to buff out when they drop the truck after they, you know, he runs. For heaven's sake, he runs over a crippled kid, and nobody at the school bats an eyelash.
Not one.
Holy cow!
How yes. bullying is handled in movies always bugs me. Well,
he didn't run over him per se. They bumped into him, which is still pretty messed
he
up.
He knocked
it's
him down,
up.
And.
Yeah. And then they get out and start kicking him.
And like the rest of the family didn't just like immediately jump on the two guys and start pounding him.
Mm-hmm.
Like even if it, I don't know, that was, if I had to say, that was the one that just surprised the heck out of me. Like he just ran down a crippled kid in front of a school and nobody batted an eyelash.
It's a common trope in kids' movies and television,
yeah, but
though, that
you,
the parents
run over
the
a kid, kind of.
Well.
But you run over a kid with a walker? Like that's the next level.
I think it was supposed to be
2019. You can't do that anymore. You can do that in 1983. You can't do that in 2019.
Well, it made it easier to justify destroying that beautiful truck.
That's
later
true.
On.
Although they never explained how did he throw the truck up in the air?
Just picked it up and dropped it.
Because
I think.
He didn't know how to fly yet.
Yeah.
He didn't want to jump really high. Remember, he's trying to jump over the
But
building.
I don't think he did that even. No, I know. That's the thought I had
that's
the second
one
time.
That's one of my favorites.
The thought I had
that was way funny.
Well, the thought I had the second time was, how did he get that truck up there? Did he throw it in the air because he doesn't know how to fly yet? Like, that actually was a thought
you're
I had second time.
Overthinking it.
So,
sorry. This is what we do on Fan of
overthinking.
How did the truck get in the air? With wind resistance, him not being able to fly. How'd he do it?
Well, and but at the same time, though, it's so you've got the Billy, right?
Yeah.
And he's new to this family, right? He doesn't really have any connection other than he's just met them. I mean, when you meet them, you instantly love these characters. But he's just met them, and
he
yes,
doesn't
that's
love
a
them
very,
immediately,
that's
though. That's part of his backstory is that he doesn't want to be tied down
to
anybody.
The thing that gets him to turn around to stand up for him is not that he's getting bullied, right? I mean, that's a really extreme example of bullying. I agree with that. But the thing that gets him to turn around is when he hears him say...
Is your fake family going to help you?
No. Well, that's part of the phrase, but he says, you don't have a mommy.
Yeah.
To the kid. And at that point, you've seen Billy's background. His mom, lost his mom. His mom disappeared at the carnival, right? And then that was a chilling moment. And then he turns around and then he goes and defends this kid. That he's just barely met. He's known
kind
for like a day, right? Yeah, he's kind of annoyed by him, really. I understand that's a huge. Over-exaggeration of bullying. If someone in today's world was to bump into a kid, a crippled kid with a truck, I mean, that would be broadcast everywhere. And these people would be
Yeah, they have
out
social media for superheroes, but not apparently a crippled kid getting run over by a truck. Jeez.
But I do understand that at this point, Billy doesn't really have a connection to him. And so to him, he's like, it's showing him running away from things, right? All up until this point. And so for him to have motivation to help him, I feel that they were just trying to push the more personal thing.
Well, it shows he has the capacity of a hero even from the start, from that moment on.
Well, that was the thing that actually gets the wizard to bring him in.
Right. Yeah.
That was the triggering event. In fact, that might be the only good thing he'd done since we'd met him.
Pretty much.
He stole the bullet. He trapped the cops in the cop.
And stole their lunch.
Stole the lunch.
Which was that made me laugh
so
way more.
Great.
That was the real capital offense to those cops.
And then when the cops – oh, and this is all during Christmas too.
Yeah.
I had no idea. The trailers did not show that, which is fantastic. There's so many things in the trailers that
yeah,
you
I thought
did
Shane
not
Black
see.
Had directed it for
you
a second because all his movies are at Christmas.
But
the best Christmas film coming out this spring.
Yeah, right.
That's a good point.
But the cop shows up at this house that's all decorated Christmas and is like, "Hey, did you eat all my lunch? Did you save a fry for me at least?" So really good comedy.
The thing that I thought was most interesting was the way they set up. And actually, one of the things that I have a complaint about that I really couldn't complain about in the part without giving something away, if I have a complaint about the movie, and this is why it wasn't a 4-star and then dropped to 3.5, but 3.5 was for a movie that was so accessible and really, my 6-year-old, he was laughing like out loud to the point where I was sitting next to Doug and Steve from the movie show, mm-hmm. and Steve is like, is that your little kid? Because he liked that he was laughing so hard at stuff. The scene in the boardroom where Thaddeus lets the seven deadly sins murder all those people, that was such a graphically dark departure from kind of the tone of the rest of the movie. And it's – I made him cover his eyes. I was glad I had seen it first because, I mean, he comes into my bedroom when he watches Power Rangers sometimes. I'm like, I'm keep your eyes closed and don't – whatever you hear, don't open your eyes until I tell you to. And I just – I mean, they bite a guy's head off.
Yeah, a monster.
I mean, that's like right out of Venom.
Yeah.
And I thought that goes too far for what otherwise is perfectly appealable. And if you lost that, or if you just had that scene redone where Sivana walks into the room, the sins come out, and he throws his brother out the window. Okay. But then when they start to kill, like if they'd have done that and cut out to the outside where the guy in the lobby's like, what's happening? And maybe a person or two gets thrown against the glass for a second. That to me would have fit much more thematically with the rest of it. While still, I'm sure they did it to show that the seven deadly sins are deadly and powerful and to show that Sivana, you know, was totally disconnected from any kind of love or of anything except the power that he was seeking. I feel like they could have done that without making a movie that I have to make my 6-year-old cover his eyes.
I agree with that as well. And then there was a couple moments as well where there were like kids flipping off each other and some
yeah, but that's they're going to see
but,
anyway.
Like, I want more 6-year-olds to see this and they're going to
if my 6-year-old says,
exposure.
What is that? I'd say, oh, he's crippled. His fingers don't work right. I can make something up.
I think it would limit exposure by including those little bits in there. So if they would have pulled back on that.
But I mean, even when he goes to the strip club.
I love that.
They don't show it. It's his gentleman's club. And if you know what that is, it's hilarious. But my boy didn't even ask me
I
about
want some
it.
Glitter. Well,
and then they even play.
Yeah, that was funny.
They even play on what you're talking about a little later. When they go, Shazam has to think of something because they need to get out of a situation. So he's like, think of something and then you'll teleport there. And the first thing he thinks of is that gentleman's club that he went
hilarious. What would a 14-year-old think of? Why not?
But then they're with leaving. A plate of wings in his hand.
when they're leaving, Darla sees...
We're going to need some more money. They're very persuasive.
Well, Darla sees that there's some glitter that's been thrown on one of the kids, and she's like a little kid. They have glitter? Can I get glitter? No. Let's just go. And so it's this kind of actually touching, like, meta almost on what you're talking about there with, like, inside the movie. And so I just put that together in my brain.
Well, no, but that was my complaint is that everything else was handled so well to even where she tells Santa that I've been a good girl, even though she's like a superhero now.
Well, and then Santa. But
I was
going
to ask you about that. Yeah, how did your kid respond to the portrayal of Santa Claus in that movie? I feel like it kind of
That's what I thought they did well. They didn't.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
Was because, you know, they saved Santa. The funny part is at the end, Santa's cursing. Yeah. That was really funny. Yeah. I love a good bleep in a movie or TV show. That makes me laugh harder than if they actually left the words in.
To me, that was the best Santa part was at the end.
Yes.
That's what I thought was, you know, they knew that wasn't Santa, and even kids understand that the real Santa can't be in 2 or 3 malls at the same time. But they didn't ever say, suddenly when I had little kids, I became hyper-vigilant about how older adult shows that you might be watching when your kids are in the room, and you never thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
I get hyper-vigilant about that kind of thing so they don't ruin it. I should be the one to ruin it for them. Not their siblings, not TV. But that one, I think they did a pretty good job with that. And even when she tells Santa that she's been a good girl, that surprised me. And that's one of the other strengths of the movie, that it's hard to talk about because you can't talk about giving away that the Marvel family then comes into existence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they played them well, too. Like, who are they? DJ Catrona was one of them.
Yeah.
And
Adam
Brody. And I forget who. I actually thought that the girl who played Mary played Mary Marvel for a second.
Mm.
But it wasn't.
Me, too. It was very similar. It was very visually similar.
So who would you say this movie is for, then?
Oh, that's the great thing. That's why I call it the most accessible one in a long time. Because you could take... Again, maybe lower than 6, now I'm a little bit wary of. But from, you know, 9 or 10 on up, you're great. My 10-year-old loved it. My 14-year-old daughter loved it. I mean, boys and girls both.
So at the end of this movie, when we watched it, there was a few guys next to me that were discussing it, and they were thinking it was, they said something along the lines that it was more for kids and teenagers, and I couldn't disagree with that more.
I think it's as relatable to any teenager as any superhero movie, because they are teenagers.
Uh-huh. Well, exactly.
I mean, that's what you talked about Big at the beginning. That was what made Big so funny. I was, I think, 13 when Big came out in 1988. So my dad's laughing at Big for a completely different reason than I am. And mm-hmm. really, honestly, a bunch of jokes in Big went way over my head. And when I watched it later, I was like, oh.
You're like, I watched this when I was that young.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
But
well, and so maybe that's part of...
I guess it depends on how heavily your kids are exposed to some of the things of the world. But,
sure. Yeah. And well, and that's why it's such good storytelling, is it's not just for one demographic. Mm-hmm.
I think it reaches
pre-teens
a huge
and up,
demographic. Yeah.
Which is a hard achievement to pull off, you know, because to make something, you know, as accessible for everyone, you tend to lose something with the story, or just it's harder to connect with. But in this case, like, I felt like there's definitely something for everyone.
So as hardcore DC fans, more hardcore than me and Ryan, what were some of the things that you liked best, or what were some of the things that you feel like they nailed as far as an insider would say, oh, yeah, I'm glad they got that right, or, oh, that's so cool, I didn't expect to see that.
I love the suit, first and foremost. I was really curious how they were going to do the Shazam suit, because it is magical, and it definitely gave Zachary Levi a larger-than-life kind of appearance and aspect, which I really, really appreciated. I thought it was visually stunning. I love the elements with the electricity through the Shazam symbol. Like, I was way impressed with that.
Okay.
I'll go back to the comedy. The fact that they kept him so goofy and not too serious, and like, that is really what played for me, because that's what I always loved in any of the comics or the animated versions I have seen, is it's still the mind of a kid and this big grown-up. But it's really fun in the animated series and the comics, because a lot of the time the other grown-up superheroes don't know that at first. And so they're like, who is this awkwardness? Like Justice League.
Why does he look like that but talk like that?
Yeah, I love him in Young Justice.
Yeah, yeah.
Why does he look like that but talk like that? And that's what Zachary Levi did really well, too, was...
So good.
He could play immature / mature / right there in the middle. Like I said, you know, that Big is when really Tom Hanks went to superstardom. I mean, he was already well known, and he'd already done a bunch of things. People knew generally who he was, but it was Big that put him like A-list. And then, of course, then he won all the Oscars later. So Zachary Levi, how many Oscars is he going to win in the next – no, I'm just kidding.
I really can't think of anyone better to cast, honestly. After seeing Zach do it, like, he really owned it. He made it his own role. And like, I really appreciate what he did with that. Because like, yeah.
Scene with the mugger.
Exactly.
That was a great playing against type from all these superheroes, saving – the girl who's in trouble, and she does it so awkwardly.
I just maced him. I'm okay.
But that was a perfect way to change. Like, it's not always the girls that are in distress. So his fact that he's 14, I got to go save the girl. So he runs over. And by the end, she pays him just to go away.
He's like, lady, ma'am. And she's like, I'm your age. And he goes, oh, yeah, that's right. Lady, that's my age.
I loved it. So many
good moments in this. I mean, there was high points that were comedy, and there were high points that were drama. Let's go over some comedy high points. So we had a lot of really good things. I mean, there's the first part where he turns into Shazam. He runs to the house.
I love the good. And then he's like, place your hands on my staff. Ew. Don't say my name.
And
then
also, she's like, laughing.
Shazam, really?
He runs to Freddy, and he's like, I need you to help me out. And he says this, I didn't believe you in the first place, but now I look like this and I need your help, right?
Yeah. Oh, when he does don't scream and he screams. Yeah, he said exactly. Don't scream.
and then there's like the shoot him in the face part.
Oh, that was such a good scene.
That might be the best scene of the whole thing.
Yeah.
As far as audience laughter, I think that got the biggest laughs of the whole movie. That even got Doug and Steve laughing out loud.
Yes, everyone was laughing hysterically. And the best part is that's not in the trailer. And you think you know that scene from the trailer, mm-hmm. but you don't know that scene until mm-hmm. you watched it. Buying the lair. When they're trying to buy a lair.
That was very funny.
Say my name at the end, where they're he's like, he realizes that they could all turn into Shazam like characters, like, say my name, and they don't understand the Shazam. They go, Billy, right? Okay.
And that could have been, you know, the movie was 2 hours and 10 minutes long. That's easily a part that they could have clipped, but I like that they left it in because, you know, that's another reason why it worked for kids, is you don't – everything that was too heavy, they lighten. The chase through the buildings in the air, and then he's delivering his villain speech. He's like,
that's
I can't hear anything.
Yes,
oh,
the villain speech. The villain speech.
That was what I was
like,
going to
mention. You're like a mile away.
I can't hear you.
Yeah, I don't know what you're saying.
Then we
man.
Have the Santa interview. What could we go through and just be like, okay, pick your favorite comedic moment. In this film, I mean, we've gone over them just kind of really quickly.
I'd probably have to go with the bullets to the face. I think I laughed harder at that one the second time. Well, especially once I could tell that the rest of the theater was real, because I'm the type. I laugh at a lot of parts of movies where other people don't laugh, and I've finally gotten over the part where I don't care if I'm in the theater and I'm the only one laughing at it. In fact, sometimes maybe that'll help somebody else either realize that that's funny or realize that that's, help them feel comfortable laughing when nobody else is. But that was one where it became extra funny when really people got how funny that was.
Mm-hmm. My one of my favorite parts was when he tried to leap, over the building and ended up leaving into it. Yeah, I died. Like, that made me laugh so hard.
Sorry.
I think the leaping into the building or the monologuing was one of my favorites. But I also want to mention just the dog in the way when he's trying to put the bus down. Man. I don't know why, but that just cracked me up absolutely, completely. And the dog's just
what I saw was
caring.
You shot lightning at a bus. And then I saved it.
It was great.
So I think, I mean, there's just so many. It's really hard to pick a favorite. But I'd have to say, when looking at this as a whole, and it's a PG movie, right?
It's PG-13.
It's rated PG-13?
I double-checked, because the reps thought it was PG.
Yeah, the rep was telling us it was PG. Okay, so maybe that might change this a bit. But that even at a PG-13 movie, so there's like no swearing, right?
Except, there's a little bit.
Well, a little bit. But then,
Thaddeus
like,
swears. Oh, trust me, I catch all those too.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If the Santa at the end was not bleeped, this would be an R-rated movie. And I was laughing like hysterically at it. And I think from a standpoint of this being a PG-13 movie and having that joke have a little extra layer to it.
Well, here's the other thing. Working in a news organization, I was telling somebody else about this, it kind of ruins the movies a little bit because knowing how things are covered and how quick people want to cover stuff. And, I report the traffic. So anytime I see these things where there's these huge chases involving like 47 vehicles blown up and crashed into, I'm like, there is no way that this would happen this long. So that was one of the things. Like, there's no way Santa would have been dropping F-bombs on the air that long. They would have had that so much faster.
Yeah, yeah.
I hate that. I hate
it
that
is,
it does
It is
that
not
to
realistic, but no. Still hilarious. So what about drama moments, okay? We've got, I mean, one thing I noticed.
I don't think there's any competition for the drama moment. It was when he meets up with his mom and finds out she wasn't looking for him.
That was rough.
And she's really not even interested now.
Well, and he hands him the compass, mm-hmm. and she's like, what's that? And I'm just like, my heart.
That
no,
was like his whole
no.
life.
Well,
like,
and he's like, I think you'll need this more than I do.
This is so symbolic, and she has no clue.
Oh, wow. Well, and did you notice that when he's going up to that door, it's the only one that has a footprint on the door?
Yeah.
And then, like, you hear the kind of emotional abuse behind, and it was, I don't know, I just thought that was a little interesting little detail that they threw in
And that
there.
Was a good balance, too, because that's, I thought that was a good, it was like a MacGuffin at first, and then it turned out to be a real thing, and then it had, it had a payoff, because now he can actually, you notice that was after that he finally put his hands in on the table, that was fairly obvious, I'm sure you all noticed that.
They set that up, yeah. Well,
and one thing that I noticed about the dramatic moments in this is that the pivotal moments of the story, so like the inciting incident, the climax, or the midpoint, the despair moment, they're all drama moments. Mm-hmm. They're all based around drama. And so it's pivotal around this actually, this heart-wrenching story about a child that was actually, spoiler, left behind by her mother because she felt she could not provide for him. And that is just, I mean, I'm getting chills just saying that myself right now. I mean, so you've got the card.
But I think what's worse, though, it's not even so much that she left him then, because that's actually an action you can kind of understand, a girl feeling overwhelmed. She was 19. She knows that foster care exists, and maybe if he ends up with two parents who want him, that's better than what I can give him as a 19-year-old with an ex who's in jail, or at least ended up going to jail. But it was when he came back, she didn't even want to hug him. She didn't want him in the house. She was more worried about her abusive guy than she was, like, not even like, I'm glad, like, did she tear up? But if she teared up, it was more thinking about how this was going to impact
her. I think that was you tearing up.
As opposed to, oh my gosh, this is my son. And that, so to, that to me was much more cruel and heartbreaking. The fact that not only now that you see him, I still don't want anything to do with you. And they set that up. The social worker lady said, you know, you're searching for someone who I could argue doesn't want to find you.
Yeah. Well,
and the dramatic moments in this have a nice setup and a huge payoff.
Yeah.
And that's the best part about it. I mean, you see him at the carnival as a kid. He wants the tiger, right? He wants the tiger the whole time. And
yeah, what's with the tiger theme? He had the tiger on his backpack. And did you notice that the things that are holding his cape are tiger faces?
Well, yeah, he obviously liked tigers. And wanted tigers.
I didn't know if those were related. I was going to ask you guys about that.
It's all this, and she gets him the compass, right?
Yeah.
But then toward the end when he's like fighting the bad guy, right? And there's this little girl hiding.
Yeah,
in
and he
that,
gives her the tiger.
He gives her the tiger.
He gives her the tiger. Tells her to hold it close.
And I believe he was at Philadelphia the first time I did it. That was something I caught the second time.
Quite literally saves the cat.
Well, I think it's interesting that family is really at the core of the theme of this film. I mean, you even look at Dr. Thaddeus Savannah and his issues with family is what turns him into a supervillain.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know,
they treated him badly and. Then he didn't care.
Yeah, and then that's kind
of... Was he adopted? That was never clear, but he looked like he's of Indian descent, and his family did not. In fact, I thought that was Gary Cole in the beard first when I first saw him.
I think they were just trying to apply like a black sheep kind of situation, but it's like when he confirms his villainies when he takes out his family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and like these seven deadly sins, you know, they become a part of his life. You know, his old life is gone now. And I found that very interesting, like all of the themes of family, whether it's the adopted kids who, you know, are all choosing to take care of each other because that's all they have.
Right.
You know, family's really at the core of this film.
And that was the line from the dad, or it was either the mom to the dad or the dad to the mom when Billy's sneaking up the stairs and he overhears that part. Like, all we can do is provide them with love here. If they choose to call it home, that's up to them.
Exactly.
Which at first I thought I wasn't going to like the foster family too much because it seemed too perfect. Mm-hmm. And then as you dig more into their characters and their backgrounds, you understand, oh, this is a family that
You mean Latina
struggled.
Angelina Jolie? Yeah, right. Like... And the guy I thought looked like a grown-up version of Ned from the Spider-Man.
I thought that looked like Ned. But because you learn more of the background, like, no, they're strong and they're this close and aware of what's going on because they've all gone through some struggles themselves. And so, it's very much family how to handle rejection of family and you creating your own family. Oh,
I'm a
such
good
a good
sister.
Emotional relationship ties.
I didn't tell anybody. I have a good sister.
I love Darla. She's
oh,
so
she's
sweet.
Oh man, you just instantly fall in love with
Mary,
Darla.
I wanted more Mary because I like Mary.
They also addressed the issue of diversity really well with this adopted family too. Mm-hmm. So they were able to have a bunch of different people of different races, cultures, and ethnicities all paired together
without it feeling forced.
Exactly.
Yes.
Well, even Freddie with his disability, which is comic true, it was really well balanced.
Like, oh, look, you're the disabled foster kid. He has it all.
What a great way to introduce this character. She was like, I'm just going to say right now, this is what my life, and I don't care, and I'm happy, and let's have fun and talk comics.
Cool. Well, I would like to go into, in our next segment, I'd like to go into, well, what is comic true in it? I'd like to go a bit more into that with you guys, especially the we got some hardcore DC fans, and we just want to kind of compare and contrast.
And we'll do a little bit of Shazam history, too. Mm-hmm. Even if after you've seen the movie, there's some backstory both to the character and, you know, just the creation of him and who he was. And also, why do you keep hearing us having to stop ourselves from saying Captain Marvel?
Yeah.
Yes.
Fan Effect, we're talking Shazam. Andy Farnsworth, Ryan Meeks, Johnny McKeon, Kellyanne Halverson, and we've done spoilers, we've done a setup. Now let's talk just a little bit about, this is where we're going to really mine your guys' DC expertise, and we're going to give a little bit of backstory. One of the things we like to do on Fan Effect is give you a little bit more info. We'll save you the study time so that you can just, we'll boil it down to you. We live in that kind of an age, right? So, really quickly, Shazam was originally known as Captain Marvel, which might seem weird to you because there is a Captain Marvel movie. This is the quirks of Hollywood. You always get that. You get two movies that are exactly the same with a different title. In fact, as the the Marvel's Captain Marvel movie released its first trailer, I was surprised to see a bunch of comments on the YouTube of this is here Hollywood goes again, changing Captain Marvel into a woman.
Yeah.
And I was only thinking on the Marvel side because originally Captain Marvel was a Kree male. In fact, in Captain Marvel, the Marvel movie, most people thought Jude Law was going to be the original Captain Marvel and then it was going to switch. And I thought to myself, oh, these people, they're so stupid. Don't they know that Carol Danvers has been Captain Marvel for all these years now? Like, it wasn't a surprise to me. And then I had forgotten that there was a Captain Marvel from DC, and that's what people were remembering. There were two shows in the 1970s. One was a cartoon. One was a live action. There was the Shazam and Isis Hour, and it was as dumb as it sounds. If you go look up a picture, it was exactly like that picture looks. 1970s costumes. You're going to laugh at this. Shazam was a guy and a teenager, and it wasn't even like the wizard in the movie. They drove around this guy and his mentor.
Are you talking about Isis, the Egyptian god?
It was a girl.
Yeah.
But yes, it was Shazam and Isis. It was 1970s. All right. Did you ever see the Spider-Man live action TV show from the 70s?
It's terrible.
Horrifying.
It's absolutely awful.
Shazam was just as bad. But it was on, and a lot of people remember that. Even if they don't remember anything about it, they remember they watched it. And then there was the Shazam cartoon, which I remember watching, that was 1981 Saturday morning cartoons. And there were so many DC cartoons in the early 80s that I forget which ones were which. But so that was part of the confusion. So Captain Marvel was originally created. Kelly, you got a little bit of backstory on that.
Well, the cover date on the first issue is actually February 1940. It actually came out at the end of 1939. So very, very close to the origins of Superman.
Wiz Comics,
published by Fawcett, which we get Fawcett City and things from, although it's Philadelphia.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. We'll get back to that because I got that written down.
So originally started in 1940. And then right from the start, there was all sorts of legal stuff with Superman.
It's interesting. Captain Marvel as a character has had legal issues both with his name and his character. Because he was a copy of Superman.
Even though he was the most popular superhero, he was more popular than Superman. Because of that, like in the 1950s is when Fawcett stopped publishing Shazam. So it wasn't picked up until DC bought the rights in the 70s.
And then unfortunately for DC, their company was named Marvel. Their competitor company was named Marvel. And so actually, technically, Marvel Comics put out Captain Marvel, which I think was a deliberate attempt to, you know, do this to DC. And that was the character Mar-Vell, who ended up being played by Annette Bening in that was one place where I actually thought that the haters were going to really jump on that because Mar-Vell was a guy, but in this case it was Annette Bening. But that character became Captain Marvel. And then the lawsuit went on. And as a result, somehow DC loses the trademark for Captain Marvel to Marvel. And from that point on, they can only publish under the name Shazam, even though they call him Captain Marvel among the characters. But they can't publish a title called Captain Marvel Marvel has that publication right since 1972.
Yeah, so that was in 2011 is when they like officially really changed the Shazam name and Captain Marvel to Shazam. Like they kind of had it for years. But you even watch like the Justice League Unlimited, they talk it's Captain Marvel in it. You even look at the shorts that were just a few years ago, the DC animated shorts, it's Captain Marvel. So it's really weird now that for me, because that's who he is in my brain, to reprogram.
Which is funny because they can use the name in their continuity, but they can't publish even on the back cover, like they have to call it Shazam. Anywhere where it's written, they have to call it Shazam, which I thought was really interesting. But then in New 52, which I think is what you guys were talking
about. Yeah, 2012 is when that started.
Then they created a Billy Batson who'd never been called Captain Marvel. Now, this is where we're going to get into the weeds. I like that.
This is getting really complicated here. Holy cow.
So Shazam stands for what, guys? Give us our nerd deep.
Wisdom of Solomon, Strength of Hercules, Stamina of Atlas.
For those of you who don't know Atlas, he's the guy who's supposed to hold up the world.
Who doesn't know Atlas?
People don't know that.
Okay.
Just saying.
Power of Zeus.
Not a lot of Ayn Rand fans.
Or they didn't pay. They paid attention to their mythology, but they stopped at like Zeus and Hades.
Yeah, pretty much.
Power of Zeus, Courage of Achilles, but not the Achilles heel. We were joking.
Yeah. Not the heel of Achilles.
And then Speed of Mercury.
Now, what do you guys think? Is he faster than the Flash?
I don't think
have they ever proved that in the comics.
I've seen some comparisons on YouTube videos. I don't think anyone's faster than the Flash.
Yeah, I was just gonna say I don't think anyone can be faster.
Well,
than the Flash.
Well, in the credits, all the drawings made him look faster than the Flash.
But those,
or actually, they made the girl faster.
Yeah,
than
yeah
the Flash.
Wait till you see the Flash movie and you see how fast he is.
That's true.
No, I definitely don't think he's faster than the Flash. I mean, his powers do come from magic, though, and that's a huge advantage over other superheroes. You know.
Well, you know what? This is worth pointing out, as you DC experts. So this is one thing that DC, I actually think, has been very creative in how, you know, in some ways DC's powers are heroes are overpowered.
Yes.
And the great balancer, especially with Superman, because he's essentially invincible, and that's one of the challenges of writing Superman is, in fact, if you go back to the Super Friends cartoons of the 80s, Superman does almost nothing. And I didn't notice that as a kid.
Yeah.
But as I watch it as an adult, it's like, well, what can you have Superman do? He can do everything. So they balance out Superman. This is what DC does well. So talk about the balance between magic and all the other powers in the DC universe.
Well, it's interesting. Like, you bring up Superman, and, like, they had a real hard time. Like, I remember reading a lot of the stuff back in the day, the Super Friends books, you know, like, having Krypto. Like, he would need, like, red kryptonite or something to affect his powers and then change it. But then they figured out that magic could affect Superman. And then they were able to...
I'm so excited. I know where he's going.
Kellyanne gets it.
Yeah, Kellyanne has something to say. I'll let you take the floor.
No,
right
you
there.
Go ahead. I want to hear you.
Yeah. So, as I was saying, like magic. When they introduced magic in Superman, they figured out that's a way that we can, you know, hurt Superman, and we can add more elements to the story. Because yes, Superman was way overpowered.
You can't shoot him with a gun.
Nope.
And you can really only do so many stories that involve kryptonite.
Exactly.
I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah. How rare is this rock? He's running into it every week.
There's only four pieces of my planet left.
There's like hundreds of shades of kryptonite too. No, I love that, because even when you get the comic arcs where it's Captain Marvel Shazam versus Superman, like that is like the end is like, oh my gosh. If they fight, like, he is vulnerable to magic. It's an actual fight.
It's a real fight
happening between Superman and Shazam. It's fantastic.
Now, there was a DC show, and I can't remember the
Kingdom
title, but
Come.
It was one. Yes,
yes,
Alex
Kingdom
Ross,
Come. Mark Waid, Alex Ross. Yes, they have a fight at the end. It's a very interesting fight. I mean, I don't want
to
spoil.
I recall it to be pretty emotional.
It was
it's
huge.
A good story arc.
Well, basically, there's this giant bomb that's going to blow up, and Superman has to either stop the bomb, but at the same time, all of the metahumans on Earth are fighting. So it's either do we stop the bomb and save the world, or let all the metahumans fight this out? And then basically, in the middle of the fight, Superman puts the onus on Shazam, and he's like, you need to make this decision.
That's what it was. That's
yes.
Right. That's right.
You need to make this decision and figure out what we're going to do. And he puts it on Billy, and all. I don't want to spoil Kingdom Come as well, but like, it's a fantastic
in case somebody read. But it is definitely worth the read. But I do remember specifically that became a key point towards the resolution of that story.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a great one.
All right, Kellyanne, what do you have to add on magic?
On magic, I love magic. I don't know. I love
that. Well, because
that.
In the Marvel Universe, just for comparison's sake, the closest thing that the average fan would have is their exposure to Doctor Strange. And before Doctor Strange, the movie, only the actual comic fans probably knew anything of or about Doctor Strange. And in Doctor Strange, it wasn't so much – I mean, it was magic, but they kind of saying it's more sorcery. Yeah. I know that it seems like a small distinction.
Bigger emphasis
on
portals.
It's like more meditation, and there's this power you tap
but
into.
Yeah, but it's how it relates to specific things, whereas in this they kind of have magic as – the Deus Ex Machina, whatever we need it to be, we can have it be the sonic screwdriver
Sonic screwdriver.
Whatever we need it to be, it'll be that, and that's good.
Well, I think that's one thing really great about the origin stories within the DC universe is you do have this huge pantheon of is it a scientific experiment? Is it a military thing?
Is it lightning?
Is it revenge? Yeah. Is it lightning? Thank you, Flash.
I got struck by
lightning while
I was camping, and now I'm Shazam.
you also have this component of magic that can come in, as well as alien power. So I really like the balance of DC where – you know, the power can come from everywhere. It's not just one answer, although kind of with the meta gene, they've been messing with that more recently. But I just love it. And you need those different categories because they do cause vulnerability in other characters. If we didn't have magic, Superman would be too powerful again. Mm-hmm. Like there's reasons.
Well, and that's what I say. I thought that was a clever way to take, because you either have to make Superman not Superman, in which case
Which
what's
tried
the point of
work?
Having him? Oh, yeah. Yeah. You mean the blue and red electric Superman? Dear goodness.
Well, let's not talk about that.
but that is a great way to at least give it a little bit of balance so that theoretically a less super overpowered individual could go toe-to-toe with somebody like that.
So when it comes down to stuff like that, and say Superman's powers are kind of equalized out by someone, right? I mean, do they go into like I don't know, any kind of martial arts training that they may have had? Because like I mean, to people, because I'm not a huge comic book reader. I enjoy superheroes. I enjoy these movies, but I don't know a lot. Like, does this Superman ever learn like hand to hand combat?
Or
if he lost his powers, would he just totally lose the Batman?
Well, we found that out in Superman 2.
Yeah,
he gets beat up by an old trucker.
That is true. I have seen Superman 2, and I do remember that scene. But is there any themes that they kind of touch on that a little bit?
They touch on it more when it's like Young Justice and a teenage sidekick here. You see more of that training beforehand, but kind of
Batman.
I think you'd probably agree. Yeah, Batman. Freaking love Batman. We all know this. I'm wearing a Batman dress today.
He's my fave too. So
right.
I'm also wearing a Batman. No,
under his shirt, he's wearing a Batman shirt.
So like, no, a Batman dress.
A Batman dress.
I can't believe it. We're twinsies today.
One of us has to choose.
Oh my gosh. Photoshop. You see more of like their training when it's more of a teenage struggle. When it's a sidekick, you see that more. But like,
well, because you don't necessarily, you don't want your heroes. It's one thing for Billy to try to figure out what he can do, you know, experimenting with the different powers like teleportation, secretly is fire prevention,
invisibility.
But you don't want your heroes generally to have to, you only want them to be, I think, you want your heroes to only have to figure out a limited number of things on the fly. Mm-hmm. You want to kind of assume as, you know, you're thinking of it from all, I think all comic book movies should be watched through your own, you know, 8-year-old eyes. If you can do that, and one of the things that the movie studios have done well is found a way to get older people to look at it through their younger eyes. But really, if you can't see it through your own younger eyes, take another kid with you and try to, that actually helps.
It really does.
To see it through their eyes, because when you're the kid, you want to be Superman, not just because he's invincible, but because he also always seems to know what to do, and you don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. So it's okay with Billy because he's really 14. We wouldn't want an adult superhero to be like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do with my powers. I'm very immature. We don't want the adults to be immature, but it's funny to see someone who looks like an adult, but you know,
but
as
you know
a
he's a kid
being
yeah.
immature. And that's why it works. So it's okay for Billy to figure this out. And maybe in the next movie, we'll get to see some of the others kind of struggle through figuring out what their powers do. But you don't – that's why it's the sidekick. We can relate to the sidekick, but we have the big, strong superhero – to help up our mistakes and our learning.
So that's actually a lot like Doctor Who. You have the companion that you relate to, and then you have Doctor who can do all the things you wish you could do type of thing.
That's
right?
Why the sidekicks came in the first place. That's why Robin was introduced, is they needed something not just for Batman to talk to, so
but also for him
himself.
To love.
Yeah. And to rescue somebody.
Dude, by the way, Robin gets really cool
as
his character progresses through the decades.
All of the
so cool.
I just
Nightwing,
recommend you stop.
I love Damian.
If you're going to go back in time, I recommend you stop at about maybe 1961 with Robin. Because you don't want to see Robin and Batman sleeping in the same bed.
No, we were back when
that was innocent.
Like I was playing that DC video game, the fighting one. I don't remember.
Injustice.
And my first character I went to was Robin. They're like, Robin? I was like, dude, Robin is the bomb. You don't know how cool Robin is? And they're like, I guess.
He leads the Teen Titans as they go.
You know what I want? Oh, I want them to do Batman Beyond with Terry McGinnis. Oh. That story arc. I got excited. And
I should watch that sometime.
Oh, it's so good.
I have them all. My brother gave me all the DVDs, and I just haven't watched
really
it.
Really underrated.
Everybody tells me that. Yeah. Everybody tells me
that. You should really check it out.
Literally, Batman's 80th birthday was on Saturday, and I'm like, I'm going to watch Batman at 80, and I watched so many Batman
Beyonds. He has an April birthday, too?
Well, just it's, like it's Ryan.
The, no one.
By the way, it was Ryan's birthday this week.
I think his birthday's actually in March, but it was that's when oh, yeah, his I guess comic I, debuted.
Oh, that yeah. happens to me because I'm April 2nd, so that happens to me when I hear it's that close.
All right, yeah. So I got some questions for you DC guys. So maybe you can answer some of these for me. First of all, one thing I forgot to mention when we said what we liked, I actually liked that this was set in Philadelphia and not Fawcett mm-hmm. City. That's to me is one of the irritating things, not deal breakers, but it's one of the irritating things about the DC universe. And one of the things I liked about the Marvel universe is that those all happen. Marvel universes happen in New York. They happen mm-hmm. in cities. These all are – if there's a city that's invented, there's Star City, there's Circuit City, there's
– I've noticed that all the DC ones are invented and all the Marvel ones are universe.
Yeah, and that's what I said. So this is the first one set in Philly, and I liked that it was set in a real-world city. It also helps you realize that Metropolis and New York are both cities. You don't have to tell me where they are. I don't care. But they're both there.
So growing up, I used to think about this quite a bit. Like, where is Metropolis?
Because I thought Gotham was Chicago. Gotham? But apparently it's across the bay from Metropolis.
So I always assumed as I got a little bit older that they were like boroughs in New York. Like,
Really?
Yeah,
you thought that way?
Yeah,
oh, that's
like
cool.
Metropolis was Manhattan, and then Gotham City was like Brooklyn in my head or something like that.
Oh, see,
like
I always thought Gotham City was Chicago. I always thought that.
I could see that,
but that's
too.
Interesting.
Because it's a very big
boroughs.
Mom city. I would see that as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, exactly. A very big mom city. That's a great way to look
and
at
so
that.
And so I just
sure.
thought, oh, and plus, if this still bugs me about Batman versus Superman, and I really like that movie, was that if they're across the bay, Superman, he's like, well, my jurisdiction runs out about midway over the water here. So if you run over there, you got to deal with Batman. And I just, curses.
You get that in the DC.
It's Batman's problem now.
You get that in the OC TV shows, too. Like when they're talking about the Arrow and the Flash, they're like, I'm going to go up to Star City for the weekend, you know.
But that's why the Flash can do, because he can just run right there really fast, even if it's 10 miles away.
I like to be a little more ambiguous how far apart they are.
I'm glad they didn't put this in Fawcett City. I'm glad they put it in Philadelphia.
Well, but mm-hmm. people wouldn't understand why Fawcett City was important anyway. Yeah. Like you
well,
see,
no, but
high
I mean,
school?
Nobody knows why. I can't even think of what Flash's city is right now.
Central City.
Yeah. And you know, Gotham City's so famous because Batman's so famous. But all the other cities, like apparently Supergirl's in whatever city she's in.
Is and it not sure?
That was when I finally realized that they're all cities.
Well,
except
I think,
Metropolis.
I think they do that because it is because Metropolis and Gotham is so iconic, and it's this weird hybrid of what of New York and Chicago and whatever that kind of it sets the standard of okay, most of our cities need to be.
Well, and how would you even tell a story about a small town superhero? I mean, how would that?
Well, no, they could have made Fawcett City the stand-in for Philadelphia. They like, shot it in Philadelphia and just called it Fawcett City, mm-hmm. but it would have taken some of the fun out of blowing the head off William Penn and dropping it down in front of the statue. Statue of Love, the City of Brotherly Love,
or the Rocky joke, you know, like,
right?
Oh, yeah, look at that view. I totally see why he runs up here all the time.
Lighting from my hands.
That's my favorite part.
Oh my god!
Why did we mention that in our Facebook?
In fact, I'm not gonna lie.
There is that much humor in this that it's hard to remember all the hilarious moments.
Believe it or not, as I was driving to see it the second time with my 6-year-old, I started playing Eye of the Tiger in the car on repeat. I was like, "Don't you think this is a cool song, Zachy?" And he's like, "Yeah,
it sounds like it's from the 70s."
When it comes on like later, I was like, hey, that's the song we were listening to. But that was really fun.
Planting the seeds for a new generation.
Couple of other questions. What was that burning cello in the wizard's lair?
No, that was one of the things I wrote down. It was just so prominent in the shot.
I thought, is
they
that
showed
just
it
cool
twice.
Looking?
No, it had to be something because he was right next to the caterpillar guy. That's what I'm going to ask you about
when
next.
You see that same spot later on when the caterpillar's gone and everything's gone. The cello's still there burning.
It is? They showed it from the different angle.
Okay, because I looked at it. I was like, the cello's gone. Is there some significance?
I don't know. I think it might just be cool looking.
No, there's no way that was random. There's no way that was random.
It's so random.
I'm
going
to have to Google this.
Look it online. Burning cello Shazam. See if that pulls anything up.
Let's see.
Okay, so the next question. This was a little bit of synergy that I noticed. So there were 7 deadly sins, and there were 7 thrones. Counting everybody up, you've got the 5 siblings and Shazam. Who is the 7th? And I double, triple, quadruple checked as I was watching the movie that I'm not missing anybody in this count. There were seven thrones. He says, you know, you got to wake up my brothers. And then, and if you say Black Adam, I have a retort to that because I don't know.
That was my
first
guess.
That was going to be my reply.
Yeah, I was going to say it might have been him because he was the original former champion.
That was the other question I had where he said, we imbued our powers on a champion, but he took revenge and we said we'd never do that again. And I actually, I 100% expected to see The Rock in one of the post-credit scenes.
It kind of looked like him a little bit when they did the little visual symbol thing of him. Like, it kind of looked like him a little bit.
Did Don Breakerhoff come to that same conclusion?
He thinks it's Black Adam.
Yeah, he thinks it's Black Adam as well.
I think it's Black Adam. Yeah. Because he's not dead or anything. They just kind of put him away in like a pocket dimension or he's being punished somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think that's what's going to play in the next one.
Okay.
The Rock. So,
well, I figured, you know, they actually announced a Black Adam movie before I even heard of the Shazam movie, and I thought, what are they doing?
They're just trying to lock down The Rock. He's a busy guy.
I guess.
For
I
good
guess.
Reason.
He's got his superhero movie coming out this summer, Hobbs and Shaw, where they've just gone straight superhero and they've given up on any pretenses of reality.
They fight a robotic Idris Elba, yeah.
A robotic power charged superhuman, yeah. Yeah. But those were the thoughts. Who is number seven? So you guys think it's Black Adam?
Yeah. It could be Black Adam, or it could be someone that they're going to introduce in that the next movie. You know, it could be
because
like,
it's a family though. That's the only reason that I say like, is there
isn't
another
it supposed to be the
kid?
Marvel family?
Yeah,
yeah.
So they're
going to
have to.
Called.
What are they? Yeah. What do you think they're going to call them though?
Well, they can call themselves the Marvel family inside the movie.
They can.
They've sure. They called them the Shazam family since like 2011.
Yeah,
gotcha. So they may go with the new 52 at least.
Because they never said Marvel in the movie at all, did they?
No.
No, that's true.
They
I only put in the
that.
Name because Mary Marvel. As soon as I said Mary, I was like, oh, I bet that's Mary
Marvel.
Well,
and her actual name, let me see, is Mary Brumfield. So it's not Mary Marvel. But
was her real name in the comics Mary Marvel before she became?
That was like her superhero name. But the character name, Mary Brumfield, is what it
not Mary
says
Queen
here.
Of Scots. Or
But she's
Mary
actually
Christmas.
A twin.
Mary Magdalene.
She could have been Mary Christmas in this. I mean,
it was during Christmas. This may very Christmas. Well go down in history as, you know how Die Hard is like, it is a Christmas movie. No, it's not. This might be the only superhero one that is that has that argument.
Iron Man 3 was at Christmas.
That's true. Yeah.
That was Shane Black. That was the joke. Well, I thought Shane
Black
directed
this. But this one was more enjoyable than Iron Man 3.
That's fair. Oh, no, I'm with you on that. I actually wasn't a big fan of Iron Man 3.
Huge silence.
I enjoyed Iron Man 3, personally. But I like Shazam, too. I thought it was just a great movie overall. You know, I thought they did a really good job, especially taking a character that a lot of people don't really know a lot about, and they were able to kind of really build a world around it.
And I think that works to the advantage. Same thing with Ant-Man and the Wasp. Mm-hmm. Take an obscure character and then do a good job with it, and you don't have to fight with people's expectations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is why I think people are so critical of anything with Superman or Batman in it, is because people have so many expectations of it. They've seen so many different versions of it. But when you get something new and something fresh like Shazam, it has become so entertaining because you don't have those expectations.
Yeah, and my son called it Shazam like 100 times on the way home.
Shazam.
I was like, no, Shazam. Say it slow.
I like my way better.
What kind of bothers me about the characters, though? He can't, like, if Shazam is his character name now, he can't be, like, talking to somebody like, call me Shazam, because then he would be a child. And the lightning through roofs and stuff kind of bugs me, too. Like, that would be so annoying.
And that was a good running joke. That was a great running joke in the movie, you know? Like, Captain Sparkle Fingers.
That's not my name.
They didn't have, a single official name for him throughout the whole thing. I thought that was...
Well, that's because
fantastic.
They can't.
Yeah, that's true.
Thanks, Marvel Comics.
They better solve that by the next one, though, because I don't even know what to call him at the time.
Well, what was he most common?
The red cyclone,
the red blur,
or something?
The red blur. Yeah.
Did they mention the big red cheese at any time
in it?
Maybe.
That may have been one of the names, because he uploaded a bunch of different names.
Mm-hmm. Well, because that's always like what Dr. Zavanna teases him and calls him is the big red cheese. So.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about Dr. Sivana's history, and tell me a little bit about that caterpillar from the post-credit scene.
Is that the doctor, the caterpillar?
No, okay. The caterpillar is Mr.
Dr. Sivana was the dude with the thingy in his eye.
So Dr.
Thaddeus Sivana. Yeah, Mark Strong.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Dr. Sivana is kind of the trope of a megalomaniac, bald scientist bent on taking over the world. But one thing that's really cool about his character is like he forms, I think it's the monstrous, I wrote it down, Monster Society of Evil, which is like the first villain team.
The Monster Society of Evil? Like, yes. Monster doesn't get the point across. He's got to throw in the evil.
They're monsters and evil.
And so there's that. And I don't know as much about it. Besides
the Monsters of Evil, there was a bunch of different bad guys in it. They also had, for a brief part, and it kind of shows the history of Shazam, but both Adolf Hitler and Benito Mussolini were part of the Monsters of Evil as well.
Yeah. But this was made in 1940, so that would make perfect sense. So Thaddeus Sivan is an original Fawcett Comics creation.
So.
He wasn't one that was added more recently, maybe?
Check Wikipedia. It's one of the original ones.
Yeah, he's an old one.
But like... Well, yeah, even back to that, like, it was Captain Nazi who hurt Freddy the first time when, like, and made him crippled, which, and then
Captain
he was the
Nazi.
First one to be
Captain
shared.
Captain Nazi, yeah.
To be
Come on,
shared
DC.
The power.
She's better than that with the names.
But then Mr. Mind bugged me so much because I'm like, I know that
name
caterpillar.
Him in the movie.
No.
Nope.
You saw a caterpillar. I figured it had something to do because the way the shot went right through his glass, and then he was gone later. But I did not know he was a bad guy.
Yes.
I guess I should have guessed since the evil orb was on that side and the burning cello. Those were all bad guy things on that side. But I didn't know. I still don't know who he is.
See, he seemed so familiar, and I had to go look it up. And maybe.
So Mr. Mind's just—it's a mind controlling caterpillar, and that's how he.
You know what? When you say some of these things out loud. No, I can accept it, but it's just sometimes and it goes through the Marvel movies too, when you say some of these things out loud.
He's from space. He's super, super smart.
A mind-controlling caterpillar from space.
I thought that was like
an
Alice in Wonderland or something.
He's not a butterfly. He's a caterpillar.
He's like it's great.
Isn't that something from Alice in Wonderland?
The Batman, the Brave, and the Bold episode when he is the villain in it is pretty, pretty fun. And you also have the Monster Society of Evil. I love the animated stuff. I watch those over and over again.
But
and Andy's mentioned before that that's part of his issue with DC is that some of the characters are unbelievably
so
silly.
Terribly.
But that's why it's so fun.
Yeah, I would disagree. That's my favorite part of DC is the characters.
Like
for
Condiment
sure.
King.
It's the names. Like the characters themselves, like even what they come up with are cool, but like you got to come up with a better name than that. Like Superman is an awesome name. Batman at very, very first seems a little weird, but it works as you start to get to know the character. Even Robin isn't too bad.
What's the difference between
Mr.
Spider-Man,
Miracle, and
X-Men.
Tornado Man? And
yeah, I'm with.
Yeah, what's the difference? Spider-Man, X-Men?
They all seem mystique.
Yeah. The Green Goblin?
Well, I would say the Green Goblin. But
the thing is, there's been many weirdly named Marvel characters as well, but DC kind of owns it, and they'll bring them up, particularly in like Teen Titans Go or more of these
Mr. Terrific
these crazy
has always
ones.
Bugged me. He's got a T on his face. And
oh, my
I
goodness.
Just,
the product of his time, though.
I know.
It was
just
a different
saying,
era then.
That,
but they know
I
what's
still
ridiculous.
Like DC, but gosh, those names just bug me. Like, come
they
on,
know what's
guys.
Ridiculous. So they're
you
like, let's bring colored men in.
Cool
let's
names.
Let's bring, was it the polka dot one?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. And Condiment King and like all
Lego Batman. Pointed out the
Mama
ridiculousness
Mother
of
Mayhem.
Some of the names.
Wait, are you talking about Marvelous, that the polka dot girl?
No, there's like some polka dot. He knows
there's a polka dot hero. He's blind and he's able to shoot polka dots on stuff. He's a bad one. I mean, they've got kangaroo man.
Oh my gosh, I hadn't even heard of that one.
Or like any of the Flash villains.
Pretty much all the Flash films. Weather Wizard.
But you love him because of it.
Yeah.
But I mean, in Marvel, you got Juggernaut. You've got Cable. You've got Deadpool. You've got... You know, Deadpool, I will give him credit for Deathstroke the Terminator. That's one of the awesomest names ever.
It's one of my favorite comic series.
Say it with that voice.
Slade Wilson. Yeah.
Slade.
Yes.
Slade Wilson, man.
How come they never said Deathstroke in Teen Titans Go to the Movie?
Because Slade.
Because it was a running joke and it was hilarious.
Yeah, great joke.
That's pretty much.
I kept waiting. I literally kept waiting for them to say Deathstroke. I waited for it. I'll give credit for Deathstroke. That's a pretty awesome name. Well, so that's all. And then the only other question I had is, it took till the credits. I did not realize that it was Jimon Honsu who was the wizard.
Oh, really?
I did not have any idea.
I could tell from his nose and nostrils. I knew right away.
So now he's got a place in Marvel lore. If you'll recall, he was in Guardians of the Galaxy and Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
He's a Kree Sentry guy. And now he is the original wizard. But maybe we'll get to see him in the Black Adam movie.
Yeah, probably.
Since he was one of the wizards who never wanted to give his power away.
So are they doing a sequel to Shazam next, or is it a Black Adam movie that
Well, the Black Adam movie had been announced. I guarantee you we're getting a Shazam too. Guaranteed.
Oh yeah.
Seen this, this thing's going to go bonkers at the box office, and we'll get a sequel for sure.
I sure hope so.
I hope so.
So good.
Knock on wood.
I think it's definitely a positive step for DC going forward. I mean, with the success of Aquaman and now this, I'm really positive with the direction it's going.
I was going to say, if you think about it, three out of their last four movies, and honestly, once Justice League got going, I enjoyed it. But it
took a long time.
Well, I think they realized
they got to fix Cyborg.
Cyborg's rough.
I think they realized, and it kind of broke my heart because I liked their previous method of it, where before they were making a lot of their stuff as a love note to their fans. Like I watch Batman versus Superman, and I get where those stories are from, where the visuals are coming from. Now they've realized they do got to make it for a bit more of a general audience, and so I think this is a good example of that.
I was one of the few people that liked Batman versus Superman for some very specific reasons, but. Mm-hmm. But I know Andy liked it too. But yeah, there was a lot of people.
Yeah, I saw that movie more than anything else that year.
Oh, really? Yeah,
I liked Civil War better. Mm-hmm. But I saw Batman vs. Superman like four times, and I only saw Civil War once.
Because there's so many layers in it, and so you have to dig deeper. But I think they realize they can't just make these. I think they realize they can't just make these for the deep fans like me, who like does have the DC Universe membership, and you all should get it. Who's listening to this? Support it.
Okay, what was your password?
What's the login?
Just we'll all give it a try, Kelly.
Yeah. everyone listen to this podcast.
Well,
you
get the pilots for free right now for a lot of the new content. So,
like Doom Patrol.
Mm-hmm. Doom Patrol.
That's one I do want to see. That's one I do want to see.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Speaking of Cyborg, really cool. He's in that as well.
Yeah. Is he funny?
I haven't seen it yet. I want to see it.
The Teen Titans one. Yeah. Doom is a little different than
Doom Patrol looks funny though.
So who is? I've seen the previews for it and whatnot.
For Doom Patrol?
Yeah, there was.
It's a group of superheroes started by Niles Calder. He was a scientist, I believe.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of people had a bunch of different accidents, like a Robot Man. He was a race car driver.
Robot Man,
Robot Man.
You're killing me, Smalls.
It's Brendan Fraser, and he's actually really good in it. I support Fraser. Him with all my heart.
Who is the guy that has the metal face? Like it's like almost rusty metal looking.
They're Robot Man.
That's Robot Man. Yeah, he's Robot Man.
And that was only because Tin Man was already taken by the Wizard of Oz.
Well, he almost looks similar to a rough version of Doctor Doom. Like the
you don't see where you're coming from, like a steampunk version.
Yes,
or something.
Yes, steampunk rusty version of Doctor Doom. So.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to give Doom Patrol a try because I like funny, and it looked funny.
Cool.
Okay, well that was our thoughts then on Shazam. Ryan, you got anything else you want to throw in?
No, I think this was a great podcast. Thank you guys so much for coming on.
Kellyanne Halverson, Johnny McKeon, check them out. What's your guys' Twitter handles?
You can find me at Johnny McKeon. That's McKeon.
At Kellyanne Halvo, KellyanneHalvo.
Oh my gosh, that's so long. But it's still better than most of the DC heroes' names.
Oh.
Yes, well, make sure you like our podcast. Share it with everyone you know. Check us out on all of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, you name it.
That's Fan Effect with an
Effect.
E. Effect.
Effect.
Some people get confused.
All right, thanks, you guys.